Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann today. The legislative free-for-all known as the lame duck session is underway, and lawmakers are racing to wrap up unfinished business or start from scratch in 2023. One of the top priorities will be how to spend $10 billion in COVID relief dollars. Also on the agenda, whether to further restrict access to abortion. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Joining us is Laura Hancock, State House reporter for Cleveland.com. Welcome back, Laura.
Good to be here.
Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Welcome back, Joe.
Always great to be here.
And Haley B. Miller, political reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Welcome back, Haley.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, Haley, what are Republicans' priorities? They're, of course, in charge right now as we get into this lame duck session.
Well, as you mentioned, the leftover COVID relief money is a big one on both sides of the aisle. Republicans and Democrats have talked about using this. There's also been talk about criminal justice reform, changing the state's election laws pretty significantly. Also, kind of the elephant in the room has been a possible abortion ban or changes to the 6-week ban that's currently in law. We haven't heard a lot on that yet, but that's, you know, something we're expecting to come up at some point.
Republicans have revived a sweeping overhaul to Ohio election law that first introduced last year. What can you tell us about that?
So that makes a lot of changes to state elections. It limits the number of drop boxes to 3, and they have to be in, like, outside the county board of elections. They can't be around the county. It does things like tighten the window for absentee ballots. Let's see, what else?
Voter ID.
Yeah, there's another bill that would require voter ID. There's also talk of a separate constitutional effort that we'll probably get into later. So there's a lot that they want to do. Democrats see this as sort of capitalizing on the false claims that the election was fraudulent in 2020 and needs reforming, even though Secretary of State Frank LaRose repeatedly says that, you know, voter fraud is rare in Ohio.
Yeah, so this is very similar to what we've seen in GOP-led legislatures across the country as far as trying to ratchet down the access to the ballot box for this, especially when it comes to early voting.
Yeah.
Joe, your colleague Andy Chow reported that opponents are speaking out against proposed changes, which would, among other things, no longer allow voters to use utility bills or bank statements as identification. Where do things stand on that?
Well, the lawmakers will be considering that during this lame duck session. I mean, there's always been a push for voter ID. And by voter ID, that means either one of the state, you either get a driver's license or that state identification card that you can get at the license bureau. Those are the two thought, you know, kind of IDs. And the thing is that, a lot of the groups that oppose these efforts, they point out that, people don't always update their address or their name when they get married on their driver's license. So therefore, you go to vote and your voting name or your voting address isn't the same as what's listed on the voter rolls. Guess what? You could be denied voting. If you have a driver's license and it has a different address on it, you can also take a utility bill, a bank statement that has the current address on it, and you can show your ID and the current address and you'd be fine. But if that's wiped out, then all of a sudden people who haven't updated their driver's license, or people who maybe don't have a driver's license. And for low-income people, there's a question of who pays for the state ID and how do they get there to get that state ID. There's a whole lot that goes into it, and that's what a lot of the opponents of this are talking about.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann this hour, and this is our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Haley B. Miller, political reporter for the the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. There we go. We'll get it right eventually. Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and Laura Hancock, State House reporter with Cleveland.com. And anyone, feel free to jump in. But of course, Republicans and Democrats both eager to get their hands on this $10 billion worth of COVID relief funding that's still out there. Where do you see this heading? What's on their respective wish lists?
I think that nursing homes are going to get a lot of money. It's a very powerful lobby, nursing homes. There's three associations. They gave over $1 million to state legislators this last cycle. And there is a bill out of the House that's waiting in the Senate that gave them, I think it was $500 million. It could also be, you know, lame duck being lame duck. It could be amended into like another bill. And they're saying last year they got, I think, $300 million. And they said that was to hire people and to recruit and retain, you know, because they were having trouble just finding people to work there. The nursing homes are trying to propose. They're saying, like, we don't have the funding to correct, you know, like, infection disease outbreaks. We need more money for that. And, you know, the nursing home lobby has always just been really powerful in Ohio. I think it's just kind of like you can't say no to grandma, kind of, you know. And another thing about the nursing homes is they want to do rebasing or like resetting the rates for Medicaid reimbursement. Now, what I'm hearing is that's probably not going to happen until the budget. They would like it done now, but. So, yeah, I think nursing homes are going to get a chunk of that stimulus money.
I also think schools will be a pretty big priority. And I know I can't remember how much is left, but I know a big chunk of the $10 billion is specifically a federal relief fund that was dedicated to schools. I haven't heard specifically what that's going to look like yet, but I think that's going to be a priority as well.
Yeah, and I think mental health services, they're going to see some money dedicated to them as well, because if you listen, particularly if you listen to the Republicans who oppose abortion, the first thing they talk about is, you know, we need to have more services. We need mental health services. We need services to help low-income mothers and all these other things. And so I think we might see more money directed into programs like that. With these COVID dollars, just as a way of, you know, kind of meeting the need on the other side of the abortion issue, too.
Well, I couldn't ask for a better segue than that one, Joe. On the abortion question, do you expect Republicans to be seeking to pass more stringent restrictions into law as we head into this lame duck?
You know, they're definitely going to have to look at the current abortion law, because that's on hold in a Hamilton County court. Now, it's going to go up the chain. You know, it'll be appealed, and it'll probably go before the Ohio Supreme Court, which just turned, you know, very Republican. So, you know, it could withstand the muster over time, but it has a lot of vague things going on in it. Doctors say that they read that law, they talk with their attorneys, and they come up, you know, two different doctors come up with two different advisements on how to go about that. So some of the lawmakers, the Republican lawmakers, have talked about maybe clarifying, making changes to that. I think that what we're going to see on the abortion issue more is changing the game plan or the playing field. You know, we're going to see bills that make it harder to pass an abortion, you know, constitutional amendment. We're going to see things, I think, that make it more difficult for people who want to, you know, somehow have more abortion rights. It's going to make it more difficult for them to go through the existing challenge, you know, the existing channels that they have available.
Yeah, and I think, you know, interestingly, I think a lot of us, you know, 6 months ago expected, okay, Roe v. Wade's been overturned. There's definitely going to be a very strict abortion ban that's going to ban most abortions in Ohio and lame duck. But what we're starting to see is that it seems like within the Republican caucus, there's not a lot of agreement about the timeline, about what they want to do and when. I think there are definitely some Republican lawmakers that are ready to pass a complete ban now. It doesn't seem like leadership is in the same boat. And Senate President Matt Huffman has suggested that, you know, there's just enough moving parts right now that they may not be able to get something more in place by the end of lame duck beyond what Joe was saying, which is, you know, clarifying the current law.
Yeah, Laura?
Yeah, so Matt Huffman assigned two senators, Stephen Huffman, who's a relative, I believe, a cousin of his, and Terry Johnson. These are senators who are physicians outside the legislature. He assigned them to write a bill. And what they're looking at is the exceptions in the heartbeat law for a woman's life or health. That has been in Cincinnati courtroom that was... they were told that they were too vague because the way that they were written. And, you know, like lawyers for hospitals tend to be pretty conservative. And so they're going to look at that law and they're going to say, no, you can't perform an abortion. And we know all these situations of like the 10-year-old girl who went to Indy to get the abortion. And then there's that other one that was more recent, the woman from Washington, D.C., who was having a severe miscarriage and couldn't get, you know, treatment in Painesville, Northeast Ohio. So I think that they're going to try to tighten up those restrictions. Now, who knows if in that bill they're going to slip in an all-out ban, because I know that there are some lawmakers who are term limited, who are leaving at the end of the year, who would like that on their watch. They would like that as part of like their legacy if they're pro-life. So we'll see how far it goes. But definitely there is an attempt to clean up language. Cynics often say it doesn't like matter. They're purposely keeping it vague so that the default is we're not going to perform any abortion.
Yeah, Joe.
But the thing you got to remember, if they go with that all-out ban, that would totally be against the will of Ohioans, according to polling, because polling shows that very few Ohioans actually like the heartbeat bill, the way it's written, that people think there ought to be exemptions for rape and incest. That's a popular item. People think that early abortion is okay, first trimester abortion. And if you look at the Ohio abortion report, that's where most of the abortions are. There are very few abortions that are performed in the second and third. Well, in the third trimester, I don't think there were any listed.
22 weeks is the
22 weeks. I think that's, you know, beyond that, there were none. But in that middle period, it seemed like, you know, after that first trimester, there were very few comparatively. So if you start going with an all out ban, all of a sudden, you're taking looking at that polling, you're going against the will of Ohioans. And how long is that going to last? So I think they're going to have to think about that. And I think that's also why they're concerned about a constitutional amendment.
Well, Joe, you bring up polling and looking nationally at the midterms, right? A lot of observers sort of look at this and see potentially that Republicans paid a price for overturning Roe v. Wade and with the Dobbs decision. And I'm wondering if any of you in your conversations with Ohio lawmakers, if any of them are looking at that and rethinking their calculus as we head forward, looking at the polling numbers for Ohioans, is this still a winning issue for Ohio Republicans?
I think Ohio Republicans still feel pretty good about where they're at and what they've been focusing on because they did sweep the elections. We did see some surprising Republican losses in some of our congressional districts, but statewide offices, you know, DeWine easily won re-election, as did Secretary of State and others down the ballot. Republicans won one control of the legislature pretty easily. Now, critics will say that's because of the maps that were used in these elections. As we all know, those maps were declared unconstitutional by the Ohio Supreme Court because they disproportionately favored Republicans. So Democrats have just said, well, you know, November's election is just what happens when maps are gerrymandered. But all of that that's even still, I think Republicans are still, you know, very focused on anti-abortion messaging and will continue to be.
I think they were very focused on anti-abortion messaging before the primary. And after Roe was overturned, what I heard from the Republicans that I covered was, oh, we don't want the late-term abortion. We don't want, you know, they started drawing on...
Partial birth.
They started, you know, going to other things in the abortion debate, not the all-out, we want to ban abortion. It was more like, oh, we want to ban these things that maybe are popular with people. I didn't hear a lot of Republicans in the weeks leading up to the election campaigning on the all-out ban on abortion anymore. In fact, Governor DeWine stayed away from it, didn't want to talk about it. We saw a lot of these statewide Republicans who really didn't talk about it or talk about it much. And when they did talk about it, they put it in the phrase of, you know, late-term abortions or, you know, some other phrase that would be more acceptable to a general audience.
All right. Well, that seems like a good place to take a break. We will be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, our weekly reporter roundtable here on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann today. It's our weekly reporter roundtable, and still with us, Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Haley B. Miller, political reporter for USA Today Network Ohio Bureau, and Laura Hancock, statehouse reporter for Cleveland.com. And one thing I wanted to get to before we move on, lawmakers also considering a distracted driving bill. This has been, has the support, rather, of Governor DeWine and passed in the House, but faces an uncertain future in the Senate. What would this bill do, and what are its chances of passing?
Well, and these guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but they just gutted it pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. They amended it so that I think, like, it's not distracted driving if you're at a stoplight and you're doing stuff, and you can still, like, hold if you're, like, just holding the phone.
Right.
It's fine. So I think a lot of those changes came because they're was opposition to the bill in the Senate. Matt Huffman was saying that, you know, he doesn't really want to create more reasons for cops to pull people over. So in the current form, I don't entirely know how effective it is.
I agree. I mean, it looks like they watered it down quite a bit. And I think you can still eat a cheeseburger and put your mascara on at the same time. And it's not really changed in this bill. So, basically it was dealing with the phone, and you can still have the phone in your hand. And, you know, here's the odd thing, though. You go into some of the cities, and some of the cities crack down on this issue more than the state.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go into one of the cities here near Columbus that has a more stringent law and get pulled over anyway, you know, because they have. Now, I don't know if the state law would make it so that the state lately, the past decade, state lawmakers don't like cities having a lot of power to make their own decisions about stuff. So I'm wondering if somewhere when in this process, this legislative process, if state lawmakers will try to make it so that cities cannot have a more stringent law than the state law.
Mm.
And if that's the case, that will, some cities who will not be happy about that.
Well, whatever they do, folks, just put your phones down when you're driving.
Put your
please,
phone down.
Please do that.
And the cheeseburger.
And the cheeseburgers.
The
Laura, the Ohio Supreme Court last week dismissed an appeal in a case that challenged Governor DeWine's authority to end federal pandemic unemployment benefits last year. What's going on with that story?
Okay. So, trip down memory lane. At first, there was $600 a week in pandemic unemployment. Then it went down to $300 a week. And Ohioans who were unemployed were getting an extra $300 a week. And that money was to expire September 2021. Mike DeWine cut it off 10 weeks early after talking to people in the business community who said that it was providing a disincentive for people to go into work. Mark Dan, the former Ohio Attorney General, is representing, he's got a couple class action lawsuits representing people who are suing the state, saying that Mike DeWine did not have the authority to reject that pandemic unemployment early. He didn't have the authority to do that on behalf of unemployed people. And that's been litigated. Now, the appeal, the Supreme Court dismissed the appeal as moot, and both sides are saying they prevailed. The state Attorney General Dave Yost says that they believe the case has basically been dismissed. And then Mark Dan and the unemployed workers say no, they dismissed the appeal. The matter is now back down in lower court. Mike DeWine's office did seek clarification and clarity from the Ohio Supreme Court in a motion to reconsider. So hopefully we will get some information on that. But even if that case is like gone away, you still have another class action lawsuit in the Ohio Court of Claims. So that kind of goes on. Mark Dan told me that the people that he represents are lower income Ohioans. They need that money. And there is still, it's widely believed that there is still the money. It hasn't been fully spent. It's in the U.S. Treasury. Ohio could still get it. So we'll see.
Oh.
You know, one thing, Matt, this complaint that people are sitting on the sidelines because they're getting money from somewhere else. One thing we've seen during this pandemic is we've seen a lot of spouses who sat out because they had to during the pandemic, maybe didn't have childcare or whatnot. And then they've decided that maybe one spouse shouldn't go back into the job market like they were before because they've seen, you know, that childcare is expensive. They really didn't make that much when all was said and done. So we've seen a shifting of labor, a big shifting of labor. And that's still washing out. And so I think, you know, it's not the $300, $600 in pandemic, you know, money that was keeping people on the sidelines. That's been done for a long time, and we're still seeing people on the sidelines. Just wanted to make that observation.
Yeah, I mean, the point that a lot of the groups that represent, like, working people said is that when Governor DeWine decided to cut off the pandemic unemployment, he only sought the opinion of, like, business leaders. He didn't go talk to, actually, like, working people. Because at that time, also, as Joe alluded to, it was, like, impossible to find childcare.
Yeah.
So that was kind of part of the problem, too. And, you know, Mike DeWine is an older Ohioan, so he might not remember his wife probably stayed at home. So, you know, you might not know that challenge so much. That was kind of one of the critiques.
Yeah, definitely. We're different times, but we're still feeling the ripple effects of that today. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Matthew Rand, sitting in for Ann today, and it's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Laura Hancock, State House reporter with Cleveland.com, and Haley B. Miller, political reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. And Haley, GOP lawmakers have put forward legislation that would strip the Ohio State Board of Education of most of its powers, transferring it to the governor's office. What's the latest on that front?
So the State Board of Education has just been a wild thing to observe this year. And, you know, not a body that I think the average person thinks about very often. So this has come up. Matt Huffman says that this is the result of years and years of, you know, watching the State Board of Education. You know, he thinks it's an ineffective body. He has a lot of problems with it. But the timing is interesting, to say the least. The State Board of Education has been at the forefront of a lot of debates this year regarding critical race theory and, you know, transgender issues and that kind of thing. In the November elections, the several Democrats ended up winning seats on the board as well. So critics of this bill are saying the timing is very suspect, you know, trying to strip the board of its powers at a time when, you know, there's been a lot going on that Republicans really don't like.
So the teachers' unions, to try to stop the cultural wars that were going on the Ohio State Board of Education, endorsed and supported three candidates and they all won. Two incumbents were knocked off, and those were more conservative people who are more into this, you know, critical race theory, against masks in schools, against vaccine mandates, things like that. And Ohio Federation of Teachers and the Ohio Education Association spent $100,000 in a pack together on these candidates. Plus, each candidate got, you know, like maybe 10, 15 grand from them as well. And so, the Republicans came back like a week later and with this bill. And now John Kasich tried to redo the Ohio Department of Education. Like, somebody told me Strickland did. I didn't live in Ohio when Strickland was governor, but apparently this has been an attempt for a long time. The board is mentioned in the Ohio Constitution, so the board would remain intact, but the only things they would be over would be licensing issues and things like hiring the superintendent of public instruction. And then the heavy lifting of the Ohio Department of Education would be done by a new department called the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce DOE. And that would be a cabinet level position. And so the board members told me that they're the representatives. Like, if somebody's having a problem with the bureaucracy, their kid needs a program, you know, things like that, they call the board members, and that will go away. If it goes under the governor's office, it'll be a harder bureaucracy to navigate.
Yeah. It's my understanding that another substantial power that would go away from the board to this new cabinet position would be things like setting school curriculum, which is where a lot of, you know, these debates over CRT and that kind of thing come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, and you know, you look at this board and the way it's made up, it's overseeing the Department of Education, which the Department of Education, I'll just tell you real quickly, when I came to the Bureau 22 years ago, one of the issues that I really wanted to do reports on was education, because I thought, man, this affects everyone, right? So I go in there and I start trying to enterprise reports and do investigative reporting, and I'm sure these ladies have had the same problem. You go in there and you try to find data. And you try to find, you know, where test scores were or whatever it is. The data is constantly changing. And some lawmakers have complained that they ask for things and they don't get them in a timely basis. Well, welcome to the reporter's world, because, you know, we don't always get what we want when we want it either. But the thing is, it's just become this department is big, and it's got a lot of questions from a lot of places. So that certainly plays into the Republican side when they're trying to say this is inefficient, because, you know, a lot of people can relate to that.
However, you have to think, okay, so like maybe under Governor DeWine, education will continue as normal and it'll do well. But then you look at, you know, what if Jim Renacci would have won governor? You know, you're talking about other governors who have very specific ideas about education, and it can very much become politicized.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a concern. And also, just to, you know, kind of note, you know, our students in Ohio and everywhere in the country are behind because of the pandemic. Reading scores are down. Math scores are down. They're using some ARPA money. They're spending like $14 million to try to like provide extra tutoring and, you know, trying to do supports at the local level to catch kids up. So that's kind of the backdrop, you know, is that there's some really important kind of almost like emergency crisis things going on in education, and then they're going to try to redo the whole like department.
And I want to make sure that it's stated that some of the not making apples to apples kind of comparisons, some of that is due to Ohio lawmakers, not the Department of Education. I don't want that on the Department of Education shoulders.
Sure.
Because what has happened is lawmakers keep changing things, so it's very difficult to get it. But at any rate, there's a lot of people who have a lot of questions about what goes on at the Ed Department right now, and that's definitely playing into some sort of reform. But Republicans right now are bringing this up at a time when the Democrats, that's one of the few places where they actually have a say in what goes on.
All right. Moving on, map makers, of course, need to go back to the drawing board for the 2024 elections. As we mentioned earlier, after this year's elections proceeded with maps deemed unconstitutional by the Ohio Supreme Court. Haley, any word on how legislative leaders plan to move forward?
they're not acting like it's super top of mind right now. Yeah. And they're still, and so Republican leaders are trying to pitch the U.S. Supreme Court on an argument that the Ohio Supreme Court overstepped its authority last year in overturning congressional maps. So it sounds like if they have it their way, they'll get to keep the current maps or, you know, something close to it. You know, we have lame duck session coming up, and then early next year is going to be budget season. And so there's just not a lot of urgency around this issue right now, even though, you know, the maps that we just elected people on are no longer.
Yeah. Outgoing Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, of course, told the Dispatch last week that politicians need to stay out of the process, and she's going to work on putting a constitutional amendment on the ballot that would do just that. What kind of momentum is there to do that? I think what I'm hearing from you is there's just not maybe that much momentum, at least from you tell it.
Well, speaking of constitutional amendments, there was some legislation introduced before Thanksgiving that would, or sorry, a resolution introduced that would increase the threshold for passing citizen-initiated constitutional amendments in Ohio. So those
right.
questions that are on the ballot that are brought forward by, you know, advocacy groups, that kind of thing. Currently, those amendments can pass on the ballot with 50% of the vote plus one. This would increase the threshold to 60%. Now, that's been presented in the form of a resolution, and if lawmakers pass that resolution, then that would go on the ballot for voters to approve, because this would change the Constitution. So, very convoluted. But anyway, this is happening as you noted, there is conversations about putting issues like redistricting and abortion on the ballot, you know, potentially making these things harder to pass. So there is a lot of interest, I think, in putting some more redistricting reform on the ballot in probably 2024. It seems like an independent commission is a popular idea, at least among redistricting advocates, not necessarily among Republican leaders, but if this proposal from Secretary of State Frank LaRose and Republican lawmakers passes, it'll be harder for a potential redistricting amendment to pass.
They'd have to put it on the ballot. So they pass the resolution to put it on the ballot to make it harder to put future things on the ballot. So it's a little convoluted. Now, Frank LaRose, we all asked him, like, why now?
Yeah,
you know, you were Secretary of State for 4 years before you just were elected to another 4 years. Why now? And it was like, oh, I've been wanting this for a long time. And we're like, so it's abortion? And he was like, no, it's not abortion. I mean, it probably is. You know, it'll be. He ticked off 9 states that he said do it similarly to Ohio. And I went and did a story where I checked all the 9 states. Not quite. Florida has a 60% threshold. And Illinois has a couple different thresholds, but one of them is 60%. And then you looked at other states, and they all kind of do like wildly different things. The most onerous one from the perspective of citizens who want to change the Constitution is in Nevada, where they have to get a simple majority, but they have to do it 2 consecutive elections in order to change the Constitution. And then you just had all sorts of, there were a lot of thresholds where it was like a simple majority plus, you know, a certain percentage of people who are registered to vote have to show up to the election overall, things like that. So, I mean, this probably will get fast tracked through lame duck, and they want it in the, is it May or
May?
Mm-hmm. May election, mm-hmm. Yeah. Is when people would vote. And, you know, again, that would be a low turnout election, you know, and so.
And again, remind us the sort of the reasoning or the justification that Secretary of State LaRose is using for this.
He says that out of state big money interests can come in and easily change the Ohio Constitution. However, when you look at it, there have been a ton of proposals. He is right that lots of groups with outside money are trying to change the Constitution. However, not very many of them pass.
Right.
The default tends to be people vote no in Ohio. He also says that Ohio's Constitution is like 65,000 words. It's like too long. It's got a lot of details that really should be like in state law. So like the locations by lot parcel number for casinos. That's in the Constitution. Does that need to be there? No. And so he says, if you want to change things like that, just do an initiated statute where you just need the 50% plus one. Critics say, well, that's the problem is it's just almost the same expense to do an initiated statute as it is to do a constitutional amendment. So might as well, you know, lock it in the Constitution. Then the lawmakers cannot repeal it.
Yeah, and that's the key thing. I mean, you do an initiated statute, lawmakers can come right back in and take out whatever it is that made that issue, you know, had teeth in it to begin with. So I think, you know, we haven't seen, though, a lot of these constitutional amendments, proposed constitutional amendments, we haven't seen a lot of them come about and be passed. And what we have seen, though, is a lot of, you know, challenges on these amendments when they do come up, as far as language, getting past the system, in the process, you know, getting through, having money. Do you have petition gatherers, or did one side hire every petition gatherer in the state so that the other side can't do that? I mean, there's all kinds of things that have happened process-wise and has prevented things from going on the ballot. And I think that's going to continue regardless. So, I mean, it's not so easy to go pass a constitutional amendment, even if you're bringing in outside money to do it.
All right. We'll have to take another quick break. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Matthew Rand, filling in for Ann today, and it's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us is Joe Engels, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Haley B. Miller, political reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau, and Laura Hancock, State House reporter for Cleveland.com. And we're heading into the lame duck session, and anyone feel free to jump in here with what legislation are you keeping a close eye on this week?
Definitely that election bill that we talked about earlier. There's going to be another committee hearing on that later this week and a possible vote out of committee, which means lawmakers in the House could vote on it anytime after that. You know, like we said, that's a big, going to be big changes to the state election law. So that's definitely one I'll be monitoring.
I'll be looking at all legislation having to do with the Ohio Board of Education. There are some other, and also local boards of education. There's one bill, for instance, that would make you run as a Republican or Democrat on your local school board. And I'm going to be watching that because I'm wondering if they're going to do some kind of amendment to make the statewide school board have the same requirement. There's a lot of different things that they're trying to do. There's another bill that, you know, tries to get rid of the appointed members because the state board is made up of appointed elected members. So I'm keeping track of all these bills because I kind of wonder how they're going to shake out and affect the Ohio State Board.
Yeah, and I'm going to be looking at both of those things, and I'm actually going to be looking to see, you know, what kind of things are talked about and snuck in at the last minute to kind of change what's out there.
Right. Laura, you were talking earlier about Ohio's nursing homes and Ohio House leadership considering a provision to add additional funding for nursing homes to adjust for inflation. How much are we talking about?
I believe, what, $500 million? I think that was the amount. So we'll see if that happens. The nursing homes are very prolific donors. They give a lot of money to mostly Republicans. They often get not 100% what they want, but they kind of, you know, they definitely get access and get more bills than other groups passed. So, and yeah.
All right. Laura, while I'm talking to you, Dustin Byron Thompson of Columbus was sentenced to 3 years in prison for his role in the U.S. Capitol violence on January 6th. Of course, a number of Ohioans facing consequences for the violence we saw on January 6th. He took a different tack, though, from others. He argued his own case. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these January 6 people have done plea deals. And he kind of took a risk and decided to actually like go to court. And he lost. And he will be behind bars, if he's not already, for, yeah. I think, what, 3 years?
I don't remember.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Any other Ohioans worth watching out for as their cases proceed?
So Jessica Watkins is involved with, I can't remember.
Yeah.
She was one of the groups. Kind of a planner. She was with the Oath Keepers.
Oath Keepers. Thank you. Yeah. So the Oath Keepers have been on trial for several weeks now, including Jessica. That's been one of the more high profile cases sort of the all of the January 6th charges, and Jessica is part of that. As far as I know, there haven't been any decisions on, you know, charging and sentencing and that kind of thing, but she is probably one of the more high profile defendants facing charges for that day, that who is connected to Ohio.
Yeah. There was another Supreme Court ruling involving whether the revenue that NASCAR makes for broadcasting games as well as or races, I should say, not games, and also selling merchandise in Ohio could be taxed. What did the court decide there, and what was their reasoning?
So the Ohio Supreme Court unanimously said no, it's not subject to the CAT tax, and the CAT is the commercial activity tax. And the Ohio Department of Taxation was trying to argue that because you have like Fox Sports broadcasting NASCAR races in Ohio, that creates like value and that needs to be taxed. And the Supreme Court said, nice try. And they kind of, what they did is they looked at the contracts that NASCAR signed with like Fox Sports and various cable, you know, networks that do broadcasting of these races, and they just kind of looked at it and said, you know, these races are broadcast in all 50 states in Canada and like several hundred states or several hundred countries across the world, and they're not, you know, that geographically specific, so no, this does not subject NASCAR to the CAT tax. They sent the case back to the Ohio State Tax Commissioner because there are some other taxation issues that need to be assessed and figured out, specifically Ohio. NASCAR had 5 kind of like lower profile races in the early 2000s that were actually occurred here, not just broadcast, but occurred here. And those, you know, are subject to the CAT tax.
So it was basically the justification was because, correct me if I'm wrong, because NASCAR is not based in Ohio. I think they're out of
Daytona Beach, Florida.
Mm-hmm. So so they're not subjected to the vast majority of these taxes. How, this is big money, though, in Ohio. What were those tax dollars being used for, and how will this shake things up?
Probably just the general revenue fund.
Yeah.
And I know that the Ohio Chamber of Commerce wrote a friend of court brief. They were very happy about the way the Ohio Supreme Court ruled. Because they said it creates like a more stable, of course, regulatory like environment for other companies that want to do stuff like this. It was the tax commissioner, you know, it was like $550,000 what the tax commissioner thought NASCAR owed Ohio for these broadcasts. And that's not going to happen now.
Okay. Gunsville got some shakeup in the Ohio House leadership. What do we know about 36-year-old State Representative Derek Marin? House Republicans chose to be the new speaker come January.
So Derek Marin is definitely a social conservative. So most likely you're going to see the Ohio House swing even more to the right next year. And this was a vote. He got the majority of the Republican caucus. He was running against Jason Stevens and Phil Plummer, two other Republicans. And there is rumors that the Stevens wing is trying to reach out to Democrats to make a deal to get Democratic support, kind of like what happened with Larry Householder several years ago, to get Stevens, you know, elected. I don't know if that's going to really go anywhere. I don't know if the Democrats really want to bail out the Republicans. So if it is Derek Marin, and it likely is, he is very socially conservative. He's He focuses on things like abortion, you know, gay rights, all those kinds of things. And so you'll see like a lot of bills like that kind of going forward. He also, in his like regular non-legislative life, he works as in real estate, and he has introduced and gotten laws passed that affect, you know, taxes, property taxes that go to schools. And so he has like his leadership team that he's assembled underneath him is also full of pretty conservative people, some of the most conservative in the House. So it will be interesting because the kind of bills that are like kind of divisive and socially conservative, a lot of the previous House speakers kind of put them on the back burner. Well, they passed some, but they didn't, you know, it wasn't all the time, you know, culture war after culture war. We're going to see more of that if Derek Marin, you know, takes the speaker's gavel.
Yeah. And I mean, and as you noted, he's pretty young. And he was like first elected to city council in Waterville when he was 19. Mm-hmm. So, you know, seems like he is a very ambitious person, you know, based on that. And, you know, as Laura noted, he's, you know, very focused on social conservative issues like abortion. And he was actually chairman of the House Health Committee back in 2019 when the heartbeat bill, the 6-week ban, was being pushed through. So he kind of helped spearhead that. He's also a big advocate of school choice. So Senate President Matt Huffman will have a really staunch ally on an issue that is at the top of his priority list as well. So, you know, with those two both leading the chambers, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's more action on the school voucher front.
Okay. Yeah. And it's hard to imagine the Ohio House shifting much further to the right, but has Derek Marin put forward any specifics, or have you heard any hinting of any specific legislation that he would be pushing for in the Ohio House?
He hasn't said anything on the record. He's pretty weary of the media, doesn't trust us. So it'll be interesting to work with him and see how that pans out. But he hasn't said it. He just kind of did a generic thing about, you know, like how he's ready to go forward with a conservative agenda. Center for Christian Virtue, which is one of the, you know, Christian conservative public policy organizations in Columbus. I mean, he was their guy. So they are thrilled that he was elected.
And I, you know, it's worth noting, you know, Speaker Bob Cupp is still the speaker, you know, through the lame duck session. And that is really, you know, top of mind for lawmakers right now, is getting mm-hmm. through this. So, you know, Marin will probably stay relatively quiet until, you know, we get through that. And, you know, there's actual, you know, change in leadership, and Bob Cupp is, you know, hands over the gavel.
Sure. Earlier this year, nearly a third of Ohio state senators supported legislation to phase out the income tax over the next 10 years. That bill is unlikely to pass in the lame duck, but the legislature is set to become even more conservative, as we've been talking about, next session. Do you think Republicans could make more of a push for this?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I definitely think that there will be more of an interest in this than there has been in previous years. You know, I think more conservative lawmakers have tried this before. You know, Bill Seitz actually spoke to this a little bit at an event a couple weeks ago and said, you know, was kind of cautioning his colleagues to, you know, rein it in a little and be realistic, because the state still has to have money to provide services. So it sounds like there's going to be, you know, there could be some division on that with Derek Marin as speaker. You know, who knows how much that changes things.
Laura?
I think they're going to fundraise the crap out of it. I think they're going to talk about it and hold lots of fundraisers off of it. It might just be a lot of hot air at this point. You have to have another source of revenue to replace the state income tax. It's a lot of money, billions. Mm-hmm. And the states that do have like no income tax, most of them have a permanent sovereign wealth fund. We're talking Texas's, Alaska, Wyoming, places where they have oil and gas, and they're taxing that, and that's bringing in tons of money, mm-hmm. and that's how they can afford not to have an income tax.
And how do Ohio Republicans say that they would pay for it?
Well, they don't. I mean, I haven't heard anything that, you know, I think they, you know, they always say, well, you could be more judicious with funds and that sort of thing. I do think, though, what I have heard Republicans talk about is loopholes. And, you know, maybe not everyone should, you know, have the same kind of opportunities and taxes. So what we could see is maybe manipulating it so that some people get more tax breaks than others.
All right. We'll be watching out for that and everything else. It's been our weekly reporter roundtable here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Our guest today, Haley B. Miller, political reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau, Joe Ingles, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, and Laura Hancock, statehouse reporter with Cleveland.com. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.